Without exception, the minutes will be adopted as read. We have a report from the Writers Advisory Council by Mr. Jaffe.
Thank you, Mrs. Mack.
Good morning.
The Writers Advisory Council met on Wednesday, June 7th, last week, for our monthly meeting. To make brief reference to some public comments that were made at that meeting, some questions were made with respect to seeking clarification of the smoking policy, what's allowed on escalators, what's not allowed on escalators, what is the nature of the enforcement level at the agency, and we're simply being of assistance to a rider who came to our attention to sit in her meeting with Metro staff to get some clarification on that issue. A presentation was given to the Riders Advisory Council by Nat Bodenheimer and I forget the other staff person's last name, Kathleen, I apologize, in the Office of Planning with respect to the joint development projects that Metro engages in, and we were pleased to hear about the initiation of the Joint Development Task Force, and we also approved a motion seeking the opportunity, which I understand may be considered, for the Riders Advisory Council to have representation on the Joint Development Task Force as that begins to continue to move forward with the agency in making strides toward reaching out more to the community and seeking more input with respect to plans that the agency initiates on development projects. The Metro Access Advisory, the ad hoc committee that I co-chaired with Dana Kaufman, and which involved a superb best practices group chaired by Wendy Fauncher, on which sat Writers Advisory Council members Pat Sheehan and Mary Williams, who's our Metro Access Subcommittee Chair. A report was given on the recommendations that were presented to the Operations Committee this morning. It was a privilege and a very, very constructive opportunity to participate in that process with Mr. Kaufman and with Mr. Smith. We thank the Operations Committee for its support this morning. We thank Mr. Kaufman for his leadership in moving forward on issues that came originally from the very, very excellent report that was put together by Wendy Fauncher and Mayor Porter from the Transportation Planning Board. Lastly, I want to make reference to an issue related to the fiscal year 08 budget, where we are seeking the opportunity for a briefing that I understand is being considered, a briefing for on the FY 08 budget. So prior to the time when the Board of Directors provides guidance to the staff, as once that guidance is given, it so substantially shapes the budget that input to influence the budget is so extremely difficult to really take place. Lastly, I would like to make simply one mention with respect to Metro Access. As we look forward to policy changes that were adopted by the Operations Committee under Mr. Smith's leadership this morning, we look forward to the discussion and vote by the Board of Directors today. The sort of like democracy, but democracy doesn't end on Election Day, it only begins. You've got the policies in place, and we have to see how well they are implemented and monitored. And I would like to very much, again, as I referenced in very brief detail this morning, how important it is the Riders Advisory Council and Elderly and Disabled Committee public forum that was held on March 13th, and Ms. Mack's leadership in establishing the ad hoc advisory committee, which I take my hat off to her on, with the support of Mayor Ewell, board member, alternate member Mayor Ewell, initiating that earlier this year. How important it is, I simply wish to stress, the independence of grassroots, of activists, of citizens, the day-to-day rider on Metro Access, who has something to say, who lets us know what it is, who organizes other fellow riders to let us know what is being said. That voice needs to continue to be heard. If it were not for Mary Williams saying to me on the phone 5 months ago or so what her experiences have been, I certainly would be seriously less educated than I came to be, because I learned from her, and I wanted specifically encourage MV Transportation to continue to be open to and to embrace the independent, and I want to emphasize the word independent. I want to emphasize the word independent. Grassroots voice of folks who wish to express what it is that they are experiencing with Metro Access. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Jaffe. And I just want to congratulate you for the effort in co-directing the task force. I think this was a wonderful first effort between the board and the RAC to deal with the Metro Access issues and actually out of the concern that had been raised with the new contract grew this cooperative effort, which has proved to be very satisfying to all of us. You and Mr. Kaufman did, and the board members and COG that worked on this effort did an outstanding job, and I thank you for that effort, and I look forward to further cooperative efforts.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we have our public comment. We have seven people who have signed up for comment today, and the first one is Kathleen Walsh from the Equal Rights Center.
Consumers have been involved in the process of the that should also be continued.
Thank you for your comments, Ms. Walsh. And I'm going to call next Mayor Kathy Porter, who worked on our ad hoc committee and who gave very generously of her time and her staff to help us in this effort. Welcome, Mayor Porter, and thank you.
Well, thank you very much, Madam Chairman. I'm very pleased to be here, and I want to, first of all, commend the board for setting up the Metro Access Ad Hoc Advisory Committee so quickly when it was clear that there was an issue. I thought you took very decisive action. You took it in a very timely manner. I also want to thank the board members who participated in that committee. You obviously put in a great deal of your time also, as you were one of them, Madam Chair, and very thoughtfully participated in the discussions and really helped move the work of the committee forward. I also especially want to recognize the sensitivity and the leadership of the two co-chairs of the committee, Supervisor Dana Kaufman and Dennis Jaffe, who both of them worked with great sensitivity and showed great leadership in getting a very positive resolution out of the committee. I also want to speak in support of the resolution that you have before you on that committee, the recommendations, the report and recommendations. I think that it was an extremely good. I also want to note that I think one of the outstanding things about the ad hoc advisory committee was the large number of people with disabilities who were included in the committee. They brought a level of real-world expertise to the discussions and to the recommendations that the rest of us simply don't have. Also, the working group, and I know this was mentioned earlier, spent a great deal of work and worked very hard and came up with some excellent discussions that benefited from the expertise of all of the members of the working group, including a number of transportation and paratransit experts, including your own Director of Metro Access, Christian Kent, as well as a number of people with disabilities, and they sat down and they worked through all of these issues and came up with what I thought was an excellent recommendation. And I just wanted to say to the board that I look forward to continuing to work with you on the remaining recommendations of the task force And I thank you very much for the time and effort and thoughtfulness that you put into this.
Thank you, Mayor Porter. And also, just I want to thank your staff, Wendy Cloucher, who led our best practices group and gave generously of her time and effort on this, make this the success that it is.
Well, I can't claim credit for Wendy, but she did a very good job.
Okay, thank you. Our next speaker is Janice Kent.
Don't hear Metro announcements on the trains because they're not loud enough.
Sometimes I don't hear it.
And because bus drivers don't turn on their bus announcement systems, and they won't announce bus intersections, and they almost always pass stops. I, for years, was a bus driver, and I'm a reluctant subway rider because there aren't truncated domes everywhere, and I don't like having to remember where they're not. And when the system was built, we were told there'd always be help. Hey, always, mostly not. Okay, so now I'm on Metro Access. I want to speak to two things quickly. One is driver training. There have been several times when, because I knew I wouldn't get somewhere, I always get stymied by time calls. I was told I couldn't get out of the vehicle until there was permission granted. Drivers routinely do not in any way identify when they're sitting outside to pick up blind passengers, so I can't see where they are. But the most important thing is access to Metro Access. When they have been an hour late to pick you up, and so your delivery is up against your pickup for the from the same place, you have to take 20 minutes to get into Metro Access to try and find a way to get the ride change, etc. And that doesn't work with doctor's appointments and scheduled lessons and stuff like that. So I don't think Metro Access is Metro Access yet. And I think when a driver refuses to open a van door to let me out, there's something to be said for insufficient training. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Kent. Our next speaker is Karen McManus for Congressman Chris Van Hollen.
Good morning. I'm representing Congressman Chris Van Hollen. He asked I read the following statement. Good morning. I regret that I am unable to address the WMATA board in person to offer my support to efforts underway to improve the Metro Access program. Numerous constituents have contacted my office since January with serious Metro Access service issues after the transition to MV transportation. In recent weeks, constituents have become more hopeful that WMATA is committed to providing safe, respectful, and timely service. I want to commend WMATA's efforts to take a hard look at the problems with Metro Access and for the creation of the Ad Hoc Advisory Committee and the Best Practices Working Group. The recommendations that you will be hearing about today are a good start to help alleviate some of the problems which still exist, and I encourage WMATA to seriously consider these proposed improvements. I remain deeply concerned that Metro Access is not yet operating as well as it should, and am committed to my constituents who rely on Metro Access to get to work, to get to the doctor, and to fully participate in society. I strongly believe that we are all part of the solution, and that only through continued monitoring by all of us will the problem be truly addressed. WMATA has recognized the problems with Metro Access service, and also recognize that Metro Access users must be involved in finding solutions. I understand that both the Ad Hoc Advisory Committee and the Best Practices Work Group have had considerable input and participation by Metro Access customers. I applaud those efforts and hope that WMATA will continue an ongoing dialogue with these customers. Again, I thank you for your efforts to improve critical Metro Access services, which provide such vital benefits to one of the region's most vulnerable populations. Thank you, Chris Van Hollen, Member of Congress.
Thank you, Ms. McManus, and give our thanks to the Congressman for his interest in this effort. Our next speaker is Doris M. Ray.
My name is Doris Ray. I'm the Advocacy and Outreach Coordinator for the Independent Center of Northern Virginia, the Center for Independent Living that serves the Northern Virginia suburbs. We want to thank Mrs. Mack, the WMATA Board, especially the Ad Hoc Committee, firstly, Mayor Yule for initiating the recommendation for the Ad Hoc Committee, and the service of Supervisor Kaufman and Mr. Yaffe and all of those involved. The Independent Center of Northern Virginia supports and asks you to vote in favor of the recommendations in the Ad Hoc Committee report, both budget neutral and those that will require some expenditure. That ultimately, however, the most important thing, the most critical thing that needs to be taken care of as soon as possible is that Metro Access provide on-time service and meet ADA performance standards first and foremost before anything. Secondly, something was said at the Operations Committee meeting that I think is important in making that happen, and that is that Metro Access, as well as Metro Bus and Metro Rail, must have dedicated funding source, and there need to be sufficient vehicles and drivers to meet schedules. And the drivers need to be paid sufficiently so that we can have quality staff. One of the biggest problems in on-time service is drivers who don't know where they're going. That leads to a policy. The policies that are established now need to continue. One of the biggest problems at the beginning of this new contract was some of the policies that were working were changed, and that was a problem for consumers. And lastly, Mrs. Mack, I want to say that we asked this WMATA board regarding Metro Rail to fully support and advocate at the local level and advocate at the state level for redundant elevators in the Dulles Corridor Rail Extension, and to work proactively to find the funding and begin to put redundant elevators in existing key transfer stations. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Ray. Our next speaker is Denise Rush. Waste of gas, waste of time, and something should be set in place. Also, the drivers are working 14, 15 hours.
Okay, good.
Some of them 5, 6, 7 days a week. If you did that, you'd be very tired. At some point, you're not going to be functional. So we need more drivers to work in less hours. So they're not so tired, then maybe they'll get us to our places better than what they're doing. And the attitudes of the drivers, they need sensitivity training. We are disabled. They're already in a bad situation. Their attitudes, they're upset they're not getting paid. They're working too long. They're not getting overtime over this. All of these things are valid issues, but we're disabled. We just want to go where we need to go. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Rush. Our next speaker is Fred Camara.
My name is Fred Camara. First of all, I want to say that there have been some improvements that I've noticed in Metro Access, but there's still ground for improvement. And I want to say here that I believe that changing contractors is not necessarily the solution. The most important thing and what would constitute the success for MV or any other contractor would be the performance of the people on the ground, not just the management. The schedulers, the dispatchers, and the drivers. And I think that some of the drivers, some of the schedulers, and some of the dispatchers are not doing their work well at all. And if they don't perform their work properly, it doesn't help Metro Access. Some of the drivers don't have the right kind of attitude, and I don't think they're properly trained. So I just want to stress the need for proper training of drivers, and not just drivers, even some of the dispatchers and schedulers. Sometimes reservation people also have a serious problem. Their attitude when you call to make a reservation, especially some of the younger ones, they don't know how to talk to you. I think it's very important that these issues be addressed. I am going to submit a write-up that I've just done about certain instances that I'm recently experienced. And I think it's just because of the wrong attitude on certain people. Sometimes the drivers want to call their dispatchers, they get on their radios, they try to call, nobody responds from Silver Spring. So they don't know whether a particular ride has been canceled or not, and they go waste time, they go wait, only to learn later that the person had canceled. So I just want to say that these things must be addressed very thoroughly. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Kamara. Our next speaker is Mr. Robert Coward.
Board members. My name is Bobby Coward. I'm the Executive Director of Direct Action and the Chair Spokesman of Capital Area DAP. I'm a military veteran, so I'll stay on point. I'm on point and I'll stay on message. We believe in our First Amendment rights, so I'm here to hold the board accountable to the community that they serve. Two issues that I want to speak of very briefly. One is narration, shared rides. I think when a member makes a reservation, that the call-in center should try to ask that member what time does he or she needs to be to their point of destination. Either being my daughter graduated on the 6th of June at 10 o'clock. I had called for a 9 o'clock pickup. I had to go back and the driver had to pick up another member, thus took me out of the way maybe late for my daughter's graduation. That was the point. So I think if you all can ask the member what time he has or she has to be to her destination, that'll help a lot. Also, one issue is the duration of time that a member is on the vehicle. I got picked up from a hotel and they took, and then another rider had to be dropped off home. So I had to go out the opposite direction of my home. I stayed on that vehicle for 3 hours. I could have went from D.C. halfway to North Carolina line, while I was on advance. That was 3 hours of me being on the advance. The ADA takes an hour and a half or 2 hours for the fix, the nearest fixed route. So that's a question. Also, the GPS. That system is not accurate. The drivers have no idea where they're going. I remember going to the airport, and the GPS was telling the driver to take all sorts of wrong turns. If the driver would listen to that GPS, we would have been somewhere, I don't know, maybe in northern part of Pennsylvania. So you got to work on that GPS. That's a waste of money right now. And last thing about quality and route reliability of the rail system. Again, redundant elevators, if you're not going to go out to the Dulles area, need redundant elevators. Quality and route reliability is really things we demand. All right? Thank you very much. Peace and blessings.
Thank you, Mr. Coward. Our final speaker is Mr. Carl Smith.
Carl Schmidt. I live in Silver Spring, retired engineer. riding taxis for the past 20 years in Montgomery County and riding Metro Access for the past 6 years. Also work for Logisticare as a customer service representative and take calls. My main complaints are two. One is the equipment necessary for the driver to perform his duties of getting us from one place to another. Detailed map with text for looking up where streets are, and that should be, those maps should be given to the driver at the beginning of the day for all the areas that they're going to be driving in that day. Backup maps. map reading instruction and training given to the drivers. Because, as we've heard before, I've observed the Ranger system, very low cost, not adequate system. There are versions of even the Ranger system that do a lot better than the one that's been purchased, and just upgrading the software to add the new streets that are available, we need an upgrade in the intersections, the name of the streets, that the right and left turns made by the driver, because many drivers overshoot. I also think that there needs to be some clarification with regards to the time of ride. If they
thank you, Mr. Smith. And thank you to all of our speakers who came out today. Moving on to the next item on our agenda is a report by the chairman. That's me. I have a resolution to present this morning. We have two vacancies on our Riders Advisory Council. We have one at-large seat and one seat from the District of Columbia. These two vacancies occurred because of failure of the members to meet the requirements of the RAC bylaws. We are in the replacements. Two replacements are being recommended. Patricia Daniels is being recommended to fulfill the District of Columbia seat, which is a 3-year term and expires in December 2008. And Francisco Simiao is being recommended to fulfill an at-large seat, a 2-year term that is set to expire in December 2007. The resolution is in your folders, and I recommend approval.
So moved, Madam Chair.
Second.
A motion and a second. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, that's approved. Thank you. We now have a report by Mr. Tangalini.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair, and thank you, members of the Board of Directors. If I might, I'd like to spend a few minutes this morning talking about our recently announced organizational realignment. If you'll recall, when I became your interim general manager in February, I said I had a one-point plan to put our customers first. Unfortunately, the organization as I found it was not structured in a way that allowed us to accomplish our shared customer-focused goal. In our organizational chart, the individuals responsible for our most critical functions, our police chief, our chief safety officer, and the persons who oversee day-to-day operations of rail, bus, and paratransit, did not report directly to the general manager. Additionally, there was an additional layer of bureaucracy that, from my observation, sometimes prevented critical information from flowing up and flowing down within the management team and between the management team and frontline employees. I felt that we needed an organizational structure that brought the general manager closer to the frontline employees who each and every day put the customers first. In the first round of realignments we announced last week, we removed that extra layer of management, the deputy general manager position, and made the chief of police, chief safety officer, and chief operating officers for bus, paratransit, and rail report directly to the general manager. In the first phase, we also realigned the parking program where it more appropriately belonged, within operations. We moved the Smart Trip card program to where it also appropriately belonged, unifying it within the CFO's office. Then, as you all know, in a move unrelated to this realignment, Leona Agaritis announced last week that she'll become the new executive director of the Golden Triangle Business Improvement District. This is a great opportunity for Leona, and we're sad to see her go. I would ask you, though, if you'd like, to please stop by the meeting room between 1:30 and 3:30 this afternoon to wish her well in her new venture. Today, I'd like to mention, at this point now, I'd like to mention the second phase of our realignment. As we announced yesterday, and as Mr. Kaufman stole my thunder earlier in our prior committee meeting. Yes, I guess. Yes, sir. I'm sorry. Your thunder. It's your thunder. We appointed Steve Yaffe, who's been the transportation planner at FASTRAN in Fairfax County, to be the new chief operating officer for community transport services, which will include Metro Access. Christian Kent, who's been overseeing the Metro Access program, is responsible for much of the improvements we have seen in recent months, will serve as the chief operating officer for Metro Access, managing the day-to-day operations from our Silver Spring offices and focusing on the service improvement issues we've heard people raise this morning. As you heard Supervisor and Board Member Hudgens say, we are very fortunate to have Steve join our team, and I'm hoping that she'll speak to me again sometime in the near future. We're also taking a very large division known as Planning, Development, Engineering, and Construction, and splitting it into two separate distinct departments, Planning and Joint Development, which will be led on an acting basis by Mr. Edward Thomas, and our Chief Engineer and Project Management Department, which will be led on an acting basis by Mr. Jim Higgins. And following the recommendations of the Information Technology Peer Review Group that you heard from just 2 weeks ago on June 1st, we're elevating the position of Chief Information Officer to become a direct report to the General Manager. Mr. Rod Burfill will act in this capacity. All of the realignment decisions I've discussed with you today were designed with one goal in mind, putting the customer first by delivering the very best service we possibly can to our more than 1 million daily riders. We also have kicked off an ongoing set of discussions with all levels of Metro staff, seeking input throughout the organization about what kind of overall structure makes the most sense for our customers and our employees. The end result of this process will be our finalized staff work plans for FY fiscal year 2007, which begins in a little more than 2 weeks. I appreciate your continued support in our shared efforts to enhance Metro and its services, and I look forward to working with you on these issues and others in the coming months. Thank you very much, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Tangalini. Mr. Deegan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Tangalini, I noticed you taking notes earlier when our speakers were speaking. I'm a little concerned hearing the complaints from our customers on Metro Access again. Could we take a little deeper look into each individual complaint to make sure that, you know, if this is new, the gentleman talked about his daughter's high school graduation. I assume that's this month. I think we owe it to them and to the public to delve into those complaints and maybe get back to the board on those.
Mr. Deegan, I completely agree with you, and I think that's part of our efforts to have a continued and a sustained focus on these issues of complaints. We aren't saying, and we haven't said, and you won't hear us say, that we've completely fixed Metro Access. There continue to be problems. While we've made some progress, anyone missing their daughter's graduation obviously is extremely painful. We need to figure out what happened there. We need to make sure that that doesn't happen again.
Thank you. And although we did say good things about Leona Agaritis at the committee meeting last week, I do just on behalf of the board want to thank you for your service here at Metro. And you really stepped in at a critical time when we were trying to
get focused on communication to our customers, our call center, and just handling our complaints. You did an excellent job in that regard, our signage, that kind of thing. And so we're going to miss you, but we are excited about the opportunity that you have to continue to work in transportation. So thank you very much. Moving on now, we have a report from the Planning and Development Committee. Mr. Zimmerman.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. The Planning and Development Committee met on June 1st and has three items for your action this morning. I'll note first that the committee was briefed by actually the peer review panel for information technology and got a good overview of the findings and recommendations and was able to give some direction to staff in terms of moving forward with this. We're looking forward to more coming back to us in September when the staff will bring a three-year strategic business plan that they'll be presenting at that time in September to the committee and ultimately the board for consideration. The three items that we have, first, the project development program for fiscal year 07 was presented. The committee made a number of recommendations to the staff where recommendations can be understood as direction for how we'd like some things done. There were some issues concerning the presentation of some aspects of the budget, which staff's going to work on clarifying. And there was further guidance in terms of the presentation and also the request that the 2005 development-related ridership survey be communicated to board members. The package before you includes a resolution that would approve the project development program as part of the CIP for 2007. The committee recommends its approval, and on behalf of the committee, I move adoption of the resolution.
Of a motion.
Second.
And a second. Those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, that's approved. Thank you.
Second item, Madam Chairman, concerns the telephone system within the authority. The system is now 25 years old, and it's become increasingly difficult to maintain. The original equipment is not supported by the manufacturer. And so the staff is recommending that the authority authorize the contract to be advertised and awarded for replacement. The committee is told that the amounts requested are within the budget for the infrastructural renewal program. And committee recommends, and on behalf of the committee, I move that the board initiate and award a competitive contract to replace the existing telephone system.
Motion and a second. Comment? Those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, that's approved. Mr. Zimmerman.
Final item concerns bus procurement, and this is a request by staff for the expansion of the fleet through a multi-year procurement, a procurement with options that would have a base award of 100 buses for 08, and I'm assuming that's a delivery date because it's a budgetary year of 07, I guess. And then from 08 through 12, with, in other words, four option years on top of the base, so it would be a five-year procurement for 100 buses with pricing for an additional option of 100 buses. I guess on each option year, as I understand it. And this would be for, I am glad to say, all alternatively fueled vehicles, hybrid electrics, and CNG buses, continuing our practice and helping to do our part to improve the air in the region. There is in your package I hate the term Metro Electronic Action Document. There must be something better, but that's what it says on the top of it. This describes the actual procurement and the budgetary numbers that go along with that. The committee recommends, and on behalf of the committee, I move the approval.
We have a motion.
Second.
And a second. I recognize Mr. Graham for a comment.
Well, I thought that there was going to be some modification of this resolution in light of the D.C. law that would prohibit the D.C. voting representatives to support any purchase of a non-CNG bus. I don't see any modification here. And as presented, I think we would, we voted no in the committee, and we would, I suppose, continue to vote no at this level.
Madam Chairman, I had not addressed that because I had been led to believe that that matter had been cleared up. If it has not,
cleared up. This language says, if I may reclaim my time, Madam Chair, this resolution says to initiate an award. And while we've had some very positive discussions in the D.C. Council regarding this matter, we are not scheduled to vote on a possible modification of the D.C. law until next Tuesday. So I think we are bound, and absent some modification of this, I would move to
Madam Chair.
Let's get a clarification. Mr. Tangerini, you wanted to speak on this?
Again, we had sent this out before we had discussions with our D.C. representatives. From what I understand, it would be possible for the D.C. representatives, given the fact that there has been substantial movement among the sponsoring members of the City Council who sponsored the prohibition that's in question, to accept amended language that allowed Metro to move forward with initiation of the contract, allowing D.C. to have time to pass their language, and then we could follow up with an award.
Madam Chair, if I could reclaim my time, I was going to move that we strike the words "and award" and any other language, which I haven't had a chance to study this. I thought it would be presented to us in a polished fashion. But if we strike the words "and award" and any other language which tends to support this being a decision to award, I would move to strike that language.
I would ask Mr. Zimmerman, the maker of the motion, if he would accept that.
I certainly want to accommodate any way we can the needs of the district. I was wondering if it would be possible to make the award contingent upon the action which is perhaps going to take place next week, so that should the district take that action, it could go forward, and if not, then we come back.
I think it's better for us if you accept the amendment that I made.
Want it simply to initiate but not award.
Initiate, and then
contract award.
We can come back in July and see what the result is.
I ask unanimous consent to amend my motion to make it simply read to initiate the contract, with the understanding that an award of contract would be brought back by staff to the board at a future meeting.
And any other, that was not my amendment. That's your amendment, but that's not my amendment.
Oh,
my amendment is to delete the words "and award" and any other language which tends to suggest that this is a decision to award. I haven't studied this resolution, so it's just to be honest.
I'm not sure I understand the difference between what you said and what I said, but I thought we were trying to authorize them to start the process.
Madam Chair, I move my amendment.
We have a motion. I'll second it. Those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Well, discussion. Can be explained to me what it is, since now
Sorry. Mr. Graham, would you explain to
Mrs. I'm not sure I understand how that differed from what I offered.
Well, maybe it doesn't, in which case you should be happy to vote for the amendment. It's to take into account that there may be other language in the resolution, which I have not studied, which may tend to imply or indicate that this is a decision to award. And so that this would take out any language that suggested this was an award and would leave us just with the initiation.
I don't know what the heck that means, but it seems to me it was simpler just to simply say we're moving to initiate and not award, which would ensure that we accomplish Mr. Graham's purpose. So,
Madam Chair,
I don't know why we have to complicate it.
Are you going to clear this up or make it more complicated?
I don't understand. I don't understand the gentleman's point in striking the award business. I understand. The rest of it, and any other language, who's the arbitrator of what that language would mean at that point in time? That's just like an all-inclusive caveat that has no point of arbitration at the end, other than the general counsel, I suppose. I don't know. Does the counsel have an opinion on this?
Well, may I speak to what I...
Please.
May I provide what I think is a clarification? The motion was to strike an award, and since this need was written to be both initiation and award, there may be other language in this mead that speaks to award. And I think that's what Mr. Graham was trying to make a point of, that if there is any other language here, that it should be stricken.
It's three sentences. Can't we just parse that out?
We don't adopt them, Amid. That's the staff document. That's not the motion.
Let's try clearing this up. If we, Mr. Graham, let's try to go back to Mr. Zimmerman's motion to initiate a contract, and that is what the board would be approving, the initiation of a contract. Would that be satisfactory to you?
I guess what one of the things that's going on is I have no resolution. Indeed, this board has no resolution before it. And so I assume there is no resolution in support of this action. Am I right? It's the entire action.
Yes, we typically use MEADS for contractual actions.
This is the entire action. I was assuming there was a resolution. Then I would just simply move to strike the words and award.
I think that's what I had proposed and asked unanimous consent.
But I was assuming that there was a resolution.
Okay, so there is no resolution, and you're satisfied then with Mr. Zimmerman's motion, which was moved and seconded. And I now would ask for a vote. Those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, that's approved. Thank you. Thank you, Mrs. Zimmerman. We have a report from the Policy, Legislative, and Administration Committee. The Administration Committee met on Thursday, June 1st. The following items were presented to the committee. We had a request that was approved by the committee to approve the WMATA's annual disadvantaged business enterprise goal for fiscal year 2007. Staff recommended an overall goal of 16% for fiscal year 2007. The overall goal is to be achieved through 15% race conscious measures and 1% through race neutral measures. Staff reported that the goal tracks the reduction of federal dollars to WMATA for construction and the recently published guidelines for setting DBE goals by the USDOT. The committee approved the staff recommendation, and I move the approval of the recommendation by the board.
Second.
A motion and a second. Any discussion? Hearing none, those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, that's approved. We have an information item that was discussed at the committee. It was a management exchange program. The management made a recommendation to the board that we implement a management exchange program, which would give us an opportunity to gain expertise that we may not have here at WMATA by hosting other personnel or hosting personnel from other agencies, and perhaps by lending WMATA personnel to agencies within the compact area. WMATA staff is developing a formal proposal. The committee indicated a desire to have a fuller discussion on this matter once those proposals have been developed. That ends the report of the Policy, Legislative, and Administration Committee. We next have a report by the Budget Committee. Mr. Graham.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. The committee has forwarded for approval and consideration by the board the FY07 operating budget, which includes revenues of $643.9 million, expenses of $1,104,900,000, a subsidy of $461 million, a debt service of $27.5 million. The staff will present the final proposed budget to the board for finalization and approval. I move approval of the FY07 budget, operating budget.
The motion and a second. I'll second the motion.
Madam Chair.
Mr. Smith.
Thank you, Madam Chair. As noted during the discussion in the budget committee, my jurisdiction has considerable differences with the notion of including by line item in a budget the so-called living wage procurements by that title. We are not interested in doing that. We think that the authority has not researched it and answered all the questions that are associated with that in the manner they should have, and that are just kind of adopting it, letting it fly on its own to some degree. And so I want to go over those questions again that we have that we don't think have been adequately answered on this issue. Various regional jurisdictions that are represented at this table apply living wage in their own right to varying contract amounts. And in WMATA's case, it has not been defined as to whether we're applying it to $100,000 contracts, as it is in some jurisdictions, $50,000 contracts in other jurisdictions. How do the contractors themselves apply the wage? Is it just on what WMATA work they're doing, or is it across the board to all of their work? That is, does the uniform man who maintains our uniforms get paid X to work on WMATA uniforms, and then Y on the other uniforms for UPS or some other contractor? How is that actually managed? And if you're thinking that it's actually applied across the board, then how do we audit their rates on other contracts? Where do we get that right to audit their other contracts with other companies? Why is an authority whose mission it is to run trains and buses to get people to and fro using its muscle to influence this debate on social wage policy? Isn't that in the distinct purview of the local election or local elective legislative bodies? The rate varies by jurisdiction across the authority. Are we to have a variety of rates that are congruent with the individual jurisdictions in which the work is being done? Or are we to have one new rate that's established and then expect the other jurisdictions maybe to follow us? There are a variety of rates across all of our jurisdictions. What about companies from outside this region who may wish to contract with WMATA? Are we, A, imposing our social wage policy in jurisdictions beyond our authority? And, B, does such an imposition instigate or incite labor contention in areas where it might not now exist? If we were to act, if we were to ask our own staff this morning what rates our bus cleaner contract is paying, would we know the answer of that impact at this point? I don't think we do. I don't think our staff does. What of the jail issue that was raised in committee? What of the jail contract issue? Were the opportunity to go away that we obtained product at 80 cents an hour for prison labor, will we then have to incur an increase of greater than tenfold for this product? I don't think that's answered at all. On issues of health care, some of our jurisdictions represented at this table allow a credit of employee-paid health care against the hourly so-called living wage. Others do not. What would WMATA's policy be? Are we dealing with health care credits on the living wage, or are we not? This is a political and a social policy issue. It is not a transit issue, and as such, it does not belong as a line item here. And I believe it intentionally de-minimized in the amount that is presented to us even. It is an issue that should be addressed singularly and only in its usefulness in the improvement of meeting the authority's mission to provide transit, and should be addressed as a single issue in and of itself, not as a line item in the budget. Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Smith. Any additional comments? I recognize Mr. Kaufman and then Mr. Zimmerman.
Madam Chair, it was patently obvious in the Budget Committee that this is where we are heading. So to avoid a budget train wreck where a guaranteed jurisdictional veto over a $1.3 million item would derail our billion-dollar budget, I have a substitute which basically embraces your resolution, Mr. Budget Chairman, with an additional resolve, and this would go between the last and the next-to-last resolution. And apologize, the spell check gets the misspelled words, but not the wrong words. So I'll add one clarification. The resolution would be resolved that execution of a board policy requiring contractors to compensate their employees at a living wage be held in abeyance pending, number one, a report to the board by, not my mid, but by mid FY 2007 on the implications of this policy, and two, an affirmative action by the board to authorize this policy for execution. I would so move the substitute.
We have a motion, a substitute motion. Can we have a second?
I'll second.
We have a second to the substitute motion. Any discussion?
Madam Chairman.
Mr. Zimmerman.
Madam Chairman, I must say that I find this discussion remarkable. This is an issue that has been raised again and again, discussed in now not one, not two, but I believe three budget years here. It has been discussed at this board meeting. It has been discussed in committee. Finally, in the last year, we got agreement that we would at least direct staff to develop such a policy that, acknowledging that there are different ways of doing this, that the many jurisdictions throughout this region, all of whom have some such policy, and even the airports authority has a living wage policy, do it in slightly different ways, and so there are different ways you might apply it here. We directed, as part of the guidance for this budget, that staff would come back and present a specific proposal, costed out, for how it would be applied here. That happened more than 6 months ago. The questions that have been raised are valid questions, but they're not relevant at this point. They can be answered different ways. They are answered in a particular way for the proposal that the staff developed at our direction. And, of course, those details could be changed one way or another if one chose to. That's not the issue before us. The issue is whether this authority will have a living wage policy or whether it will tolerate having a small portion of its workforce paid to provide the services that allow us to accomplish our mission, wages that are below the poverty level, in many cases for years on end. I don't think that's the right thing to do. I don't think it's a good thing for the authority. I agree with Mr. Smith that you should evaluate such a policy on the ability to, or its capability to improve the ability of the authority to meet its mission. I think that's close to his words. I agree with that. And I believe that just as in every other area of this authority, from the guy who has the top job on down, we believe that you have to pay decent wages in order to get the quality of work that people expect. So it is true for the people who do the lowest compensated jobs, some of whom work for years at very, very low wages with no benefits or minimal benefits. This is not a good thing for us to be doing in a market in which the wages are being driven up. The minimum wage has been completely meaningless for years now because, of course, we've gone the longest period in the history of this country since we've had a minimum wage of not adjusting it, a decade. Now we're now more than a decade in which the minimum wage has not been adjusted. So it's meaningless. So people all throughout this economy have to pay substantially more to hire high school kids because they can't get the work that they need done. And that's no less true here. There's been lots of different, you know, lots of discussion, and, you know, really the issue now is, are we going to do it or aren't we going to do it? It's minimal in our budget, but it can help to improve the very thing that we're trying to improve. The quality of work, the service to the customer, can only be improved by treating the people who are the lowest compensated of those who deliver our product, by treating them with some minimal measure of respect. And given the amount that we're talking about in the budget, I find it phenomenal that the members from Maryland would veto the entire budget over something like this. I don't know what to say. We will have new wages for everyone who works in the authority, from 10,000 people. There will be increases. There will be more benefits.
And we're talking about a very little bit to go to the people who have the least and need it the most. And the benefit to them will also accrue to us, because surely we will have improved our workforce by treating them such. I just can't believe that we're to the point of now looking at diverting this. And I have a question about the proposed amendment, because it's not clear to me exactly what it does. Number one, what is the meaning for in terms of funding that would be in the budget? Because the action here is just budgetary. How you would implement a policy, you know, that's done by other action and can be controlled. But if the money isn't in the budget, the money's not in the budget. We're going to have millions and millions for additional wages for people all the way throughout the agency. The question is whether we're going to have a very small amount for those. If we don't put it in there, it's not there. So what does it do budgetarily? And secondly, what does it mean in terms of implementation to hold something in abeyance? I believe I heard 6 months, and the motion actually says mid-07. This policy would only be effective as contracts come up and are re-signed. So, you know, one question that arises with this is, what contracts are going to be coming up and how many people will be affected? And does it mean that sometime in the next 6 months, before this report that we've already gotten, and it will be no more satisfactory to Mr. Smith then than it is now or than it was before, what happens in the interim? Does the authority sign contracts that might be for several year procurement that then lock in sub-poverty wages for people who will be working for us for some period of time for years in the future? So, Madam Chair, I'd ask for anyone who can tell me what the implications are in both those areas of the motion to amend.
Madam Chair, if I may, I'd like to first explain that the proposal before you relates to the overall FY07 operating budget, as we were instructed by the Budget Committee to come back to include all the policy items in there within the overall funding envelope. We did that by rearranging some of the priorities, by delaying certain customer service improvements until half year. And one of the things we did was to show a half year of living wage procurements. The proposal on the living wage procurements was mainly to retrofit, go back and take existing contracts and implement living wage procurements. Our intention then going forward was to implement living wage procurements as part of all our procurements. What we're waiting, frankly, to hear is, as I understand the amendment, we would come back to the board, explain, and answer the long list of questions that have been asked, attempt to, and then seek affirmative action from the board to implement a budget item that would then be funded within this budget. Without the funding in the budget, if it were struck, then we wouldn't be able to implement the living wage procurements for our active activities.
Thank you. I recognize, well.
Could I just get clarification on the
answer? Oh, sure, and then I'll recognize Mr. Kaufman.
So, Ms. Stangalini, when you were just now referring to us before us, are you talking about the column from what came through the Budget Committee, or are you talking about the column on the right?
Column on the right.
And that presumably is that what the amendment does, or is that the main motion? Because that I was never clear from that.
That's the main motion. And
okay, so the main motion was not actually the Budget Committee action.
I
meant the main motion. I didn't mean the amendment.
Okay, well, let me speak to that.
I proposed a substitute.
I understand. I wanted to know where we were to start with, that's all.
It is my understanding that
it's part of the main motion.
This little table that we have is the result of the directive that we gave to the staff last week to make sure that the items called policy initiatives were funded within the budget. And so this really was part of the main motion.
Okay, but which side of it is part of them? Is the main
the
motion?
The right side.
Okay, so in other words, the motion that Mr. Graham made was not actually the Budget Committee action, but this alternative proposal, which funds a number of these items within the existing subsidy, but changes the amounts from what we had. So instead of 1.3 for living wage, it had 0.6.
Yes. That's
okay, right. Which is less than half.
It's
how'd you get 0.6? I mean, if it was 6 months, I would just have thought it would be
It's intended to be half. Apparently, since this number was computed, some of the firms have given some nominal wage increases. So it
but actually is going to cost less than you thought.
Yeah. Yes.
All right. Well, what about the other part of my question? If we do this with the amendment that Mr. Kaufman has given, you already costed out a lower amount. Mr. Kaufman is actually proposing to hold off the action so that the Maryland, I guess, can have another opportunity to veto this. What happens in the meantime in terms of any contracts that come forward?
If they would go forward without the living wage.
Madam Chairman, I can't agree to anything that says we're going to sign contracts before we take this up again that is going to lock in sub-poverty wages for people who work for us.
Thank you, Mr. Zimmerman. I believe Mr. Kaufman's next, then Mayor Ewell and Mr. Linton.
Madam Chair, I was just going to try to answer Mr. Zimmerman's question, but Mr. Woodruff addressed it.
Thank you. Mayor Ewell.
Madam Chairman and the Board, I just want to echo the comments expressed by my colleague, Mr. Zimmerman. This is not a new issue. This is very old. We led the cause in this area in Alexandria about 4 years ago. It took us 3 years to accomplish this. We were the first in the state of Virginia to do it, the first in the region to do it, and now everyone is pretty much just on the bandwagon to do this. And I just think that I characterize it as silliness and ignorance for anyone to individual, group, or municipality to think that you know, this is not worth doing, and they just want to constantly banner it by and delay it by asking for additional information. It's silliness, it's foolishness, and we need to prove it and move on.
Thank you, Mayor Ewell. Mr. Linton.
Madam Chair, I support what's been said by Mr. Zimmerman as well, but I think I get very concerned when we in this country throw around code words like social policy and social engineering. When we talk about providing a wage for our employees who do service to the people that live in this country. It's amazing to me that when we spend money with companies like Halliburton and reconstructing Iraq, and when we have those type of high costs of paying of contracts and that kind of waste, that we talk about it being a good public policy, we talk about being good for business, yet when we talk about the very people who provide the service to our customers, some of which have actually spoken today, who talked about the quality of the Metro Access service and how that policy is in fact impacted by the quality of the employees that you hire and the wages in which they're offered. This is not social engineering. This is part of the business providing service to this region and making sure that we have people that can work for us that are getting a wage where they want to work and do the service that this region requires. So I think we need to stop talking about this as social engineering. This is business. This is about the business of running this authority in a way that provides a quality service that our customers demand. And I think that's the context in which it should be addressed.
Yeah, I recognize the issues that are involved in this action, and I recognize that if we proceed to incorporate what is now a mere $600,000 for the living wage proposal. If we proceed to incorporate that tiny amount of money, it will face a jurisdictional veto from the state of Maryland. But I got to say that, you know, I was the author of the $11.75 living wage proposal in the District of Columbia, which has passed. And we are second only to the city of Alexandria, which has $11.80. I wanted that nickel, Mayor Ewell, but I, for reasons that mystify me, we had to settle for $11.75 and be second rather than tied for first. But this is a very important issue for those who are least able, you know, to really afford the necessaries of life. Mr. Zimmerman is correct. We've discussed this year after year. I've supported it year after year. I'm not sure where a veto will lead us in terms of this budget, but even with the prospect, the specter, if you will, of that veto, I have to support the living wage at this point. It's time to do this and to move on. Madam Chair, I move the previous question.
Madam Chair.
I withdraw the previous question.
Thank you. Mr. Solomon.
I want to be heard on this issue as well.
Thank you.
I just want to say that not all members of Maryland agree with Mr. Smith's comment. I support the living wage procurement, and I've done so for my 3 years here on the board. And my position today might not mean much in connection with the vote, but hopefully in the near future that would change. Thank you.
Thank you, Mrs. Solomon. Mr. Smith.
I would ask staff for clarification. The gentleman from Arlington noted that all of the jurisdictions are involved in this, and the gentleman from Alexandria used the word everyone. Does the County of Fairfax have a living wage?
Madam Chairman?
The answer, no is the answer.
No?
Madam Chairman.
Right, and I'm going to call on her just as soon as.
I just wanted to know the answer to that question.
As soon as no resonates. I'll answer your question with a no, and I would like to correct, and hopefully we can permanently correct Mayor Yule's comment. I hope that we are not silly and ignorant. I think we are a slower moving process here, but having been one to introduce the living wage.
Fairfax is less.
Oh, yeah, there are times we are slowly moving. But let me go back to the comments that I shared, colleagues in Fairfax, and what I truly believe. I think too often we forget that we measure quality of service at various levels of employee by wage and by its outcome in affecting the quality of work that we get. And it is strange that we hire senior managers throughout our organizations in competitive ways based upon wage and what quality we think they bring to us. But unfortunately, we see people on the other end and we say that we don't. I think the point to be made here, even more importantly, is, and it's in the research that I've done in my looking at this, is that contractors who do provide a living wage repeatedly say that they are able to keep a consistent and dedicated worker that is willing to give it their best in terms of the organization they work in, and it reduces the cost to them as a contract in terms of retention and in terms of commitment to work. So it's good for business as well as good for the people that it serves. So I think hopefully we do move forward in Fairfax, but here at this Metro Board, I think it is where we should be. As Mr. Linton said, we all heard that our Metro Access folks indicate that if we could only provide quality workers, workers that could read maps better, workers that could drive and be sensitive to the customers that they're serving, we would invest less in the Metro Access budget because it would be better served for us. So this is both good for business and good for the people that serve us. So I hope that we can get past the question here of what we will include in our budget to reflect what would be the service to provide a living wage to the employees and the contractors that serve us.
Thank you, Ms. Hudgens. I want to speak. I'm going to support this substitute motion, and I'm going to support it because it does provide for funding for a living wage for 6 months in our budget. We've waited, as has been pointed out here, over 3 years for this proposal. It has not moved very far. I personally have been in support of a living wage for this authority. I believe that we will have a living wage at the end of this six-month period. I work for an agency whose main mission is to have an impact on poverty, and so I'm very familiar with the issues that our citizens in this community face when they don't have a living wage. But I think that the fact that we will fund this for 6 months in the budget, the fact that there are questions that have been raised that need to be explored, gives us enough momentum to move forward to actually accomplish our goal at the end of this period. So, Mr. Zerman.
I'm not sure I entirely understand. The funding you're referring to actually is already in the motion that was before us.
So it is.
The amendment that we'll be voting on is simply to not implement it.
But it doesn't, well, it says it holds in advance, which to me means that the funding is not there.
No, the funding is
no,
there.
No, that's not what the wording, the intent of the wording does not clarify that.
Madam
that
Chair.
Needs to be modified.
Mr. Coughlin, would you speak to that?
The money is still there. It's basically the way it would physically appear would be the Appendix A, this part of the resolution that I amended. This would basically add under, well, it's made, the term may cause some wrinkling of eyebrows, but says budget risks and covers everything from being sure we recognize that, you know, which we'll be talking about later, the Metro Access Service will have some fiscal implications. A number of other items is put in the category of holding it in abeyance. The money is not off the table. The money is part of the budget. It's just saying that it will stay there until such time as those two items are completed. That is, we do have the detailed report back by a time certain, and it does require an affirmative action to then put it in place. Up to that point, contracts executed would not include the living wage provision. If we do act, then from that point forward, the money would be there to ensure its execution.
Madam Chair.
Mr. Grant.
Madam Chair, I move to strike point two, the requirement that there be affirmative action by the board to authorize this policy, because by striking point two, we achieve what you say is the objective, which is to provide a half a year funding for the living wage, because the way it's presently worded, there is no commitment to the living wage in this coming fiscal year unless this board affirmatively acts to authorize it. And so this would achieve at least the purpose that you have indicated, Madam Chair, and I move to strike.
Motion now, parliamentarian, we have a motion and a second.
I think there's two amendments away from the main motion. I don't know whether that...
Is this an amendment or...
Excuse me, two. Is a substitute?
Secondary amendment.
But Mr. Kaufman had a substitute.
I put a substitute on
it. It's not really a substitute. It's an amendment.
The amendment's to the substitute.
But there's an amendment to that.
I moved it as a substitute.
He did.
It doesn't make a difference for this case.
So is this an amendment to the substitute?
Yes.
All right, we have a motion and a second. Those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
No.
No.
No. That amendment fails.
What is the vote on the amendment?
The vote on the amendment is
2-4.
The record, I assume, will identify that Mr. Graham and I voted in the affirmative.
That's correct.
On that motion.
That's correct.
Madam
well,
Chair.
I just, if I may, just to put a fine point on this, then the motion that is the substitute motion that is before us does not achieve, Mrs. Mack, the purpose that you have described. It simply doesn't. If I don't know how to describe it because it's such a peculiar motion, but it clearly says that nothing's going to happen here unless this board takes affirmative action following the submission of a report. So no one should be led to believe that there's any funding here at all for a living wage at Metro WMATA. And so let's at least be clear about what we're doing, because that is, in fact, what is before us.
Madam Chairman?
Mr. Zimmerman.
Well, there may be some funding. Essentially, what Mr. Graham says is unfortunately right, that this amendment that is before us, it would prevent its ever being used for the purpose for which it's stated. And I would be concerned that even before we have a chance to vote on that policy change in 6 months that would then allow it, that we're going to have a rush to have contracts in here signed so that people can get away with continuing to provide substandard wages. In any case, assuming that those who evidently support this are going to prevail, I would ask that board members be provided with a list of any contracts that are coming up, when they're coming up, that would be affected in this way. And I'm going to want to make sure we have every single one of them brought before committee and the board for consideration so we can know what we're doing. So, you know, if we're going to actually allow things to go forward without any measure to protect the people who work for the various companies that we're going to be paying money to do services for this agency, that we're going to know exactly how many people we're affecting when we do it. So I'd ask, Madam Chair, that the board be provided with a list forthwith of any such contracts that are coming forward, and that to the extent that that should change in this period of time, that we be provided on a timely basis with any information about any such contracts.
I certainly support that request, Mr. Zimmerman.
Madam Chairman.
Mayor Ewell.
Another way to approach this would be to have two votes on this matter. Have a vote on the issue of living wage first, and if that, whatever the outcome of that is, you can then take a vote on the budget itself.
I think that's what we got.
Well,
that's
I'm not sure. That's what this does. That's. What.
I know. I mean, that's really what the substitute does, I think.
Right, but that's the understanding.
The previous question has been called for.
Meaning the amendment before.
Yes, exactly. The substitute amendment. Those in favor.
This is the Kaufman amendment.
Okay. Those in favor of the substitute amendment vote aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed.
No.
The vote is 4-2. The amendment succeeds.
Madam Chair, may I be recorded as voting against this substitute?
Yes.
Madam Chairman, I trust the minutes will reflect the actual vote by member.
Yes. Thank you.
I move the previous question on the main motion.
The question has been called for. Those in favor indicate by saying aye. This is now, we are now voting. Let me make sure that we're.
You got to vote on the substitute motion. In total.
We voted on the substitute.
We already did that. That was last
one. We did that.
That's done.
It's precedent.
That's it.
I know, once you've
then the other motion's no longer.
Well, but we have to pass the substitute, the motion
really
as substitute.
It was just an amendment, but either way, you now have to vote on the main motion.
Okay.
Which is as amended.
We should proceed to vote on
fine.
Okay.
And I call for a vote on the main motion as amended. Those in favor indicate by saying aye. Aye. Those opposed.
No.
The vote is 4-2. The motion succeeds, and the budget for 2007 is approved as amended.
Madam Chair.
Mr. Grant.
The second action item that came out of the Budget Committee is the resolution for the FY07-12 Capital Improvement Program. The committee has forwarded to the board an FY2007 capital improvement program with a total budget of $734.5 million. The budget includes IRP of $293 million, rail cars program of $293 million, bus program of $45 million, security program of $45 million, subject to the receipt of federal funds, credit program and debt service of $29 million, system expansion, planning of $1.5 million, system access capacity program of $21.4 million, and system expansion program of $3.7 million. I move approval.
I have a motion.
Second.
And a second. Any discussion?
Madam Chair.
Mrs. Linton.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, subsequent to this, later on in this meeting, we will discuss the Silver Springs Metro Center proposal. In that proposal, and at the public hearing, there were some discussions about a southwest entrance being constructed there that was outside of the proposal itself. And we've had some recent discussions with members of Congress and Montgomery County about some efforts to move that project forward. I'm wondering if I can ask a question here of the general manager and also the our CFO, whether or not if we go forth with the budget now without a placeholder for some opportunity to include that project, would it be prohibited into the next budget year?
We can amend the budget subsequently through action of the Budget Committee and the Board to reflect any additional resources we receive from the county on a reimbursable project or the federal government in the form of direct appropriations. There are also capital balances that we were discussing in the last months, the last week's Budget Committee meeting, and the county is and the representatives from Maryland are always have access to establishing, helping the board establish priorities for investments going forward.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Linton. Any further comment? Hearing none, those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, that's approved. Mr. Graham.
The final item, action item, is to approve approval to modify a contract to provide a single access telephone number for all WMATA services. Staff requested permission to have a contractor design and implement a consolidated single telephone number so that all callers to that number will have access to WMATA services. This is at a cost of $150,000. I move approval.
Second.
Motion and a second. Discussion? Hearing none, those approved indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? It's approved.
Madam Chair, there were three information items which I will simply note in summary. There were follow-up questions and answers from the May 11th meeting. There was discussion and presentation on the purchase card and telecom improvements. And we did review the jurisdictional comments on FY07 operating budget and FY07 2012 CIP. That concludes our report, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Graham. Report of the Real Estate Committee, Mr. Deegan.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. The Real Estate Committee met in public session on June 8, 2006 and voted to recommend the board consideration of the following item. Approval of staff report for compact public hearing, Silver Spring Transit Center. As previously authorized by the WMATA board, WMATA conducted a compact public hearing on April 24, 2006. A total of 22 individuals testified or presented written comments. There was general support for the project. However, those testifying or commenting offered a number of suggestions to improve the transit center. The staff report sets forth how WMATA will follow up on these suggestions. The Real Estate Committee voted to recommend to the board approval of the staff report as well as a resolution to amend the adopted regional system and general plans for the Silver Spring Metro Rail Center station. I move approval.
We have a motion.
Second.
And a second. Discussion? Mr. Linton.
Madam Chair, as the hearing examiner for the compact hearing, there were a number of individuals, as stated in the report, who came forth to testify. I'm also very pleased that the staff has made a very concrete effort to be responsive to many of those recommendations that came out of the public hearing, and this report reflects that. I do want to note, however, as I indicated before, that under item 4, other related projects identified as the Southwest entrance. That did come up in the public hearing, and it also reflects pretty much what I see as an needed additive to that project. Although it's outside the project proper, it would, in fact, create a better access for those during the course of construction if we were to proceed with opening up that Southwest entrance prior to the construction of the Silver Spring Center. There are discussions going on right now and have been in the last month or two with our staff as well as members of the county as well as the Congress in trying to provide a way of getting some financial support to move that project forward. I would just like to encourage us to our interim general manager that we continue to pursue that. It would make the public access, our customers, during the course of the construction, and make it much more easier for them to flow through the project during construction and will basically really add to the entire project when it's completed. So I would hope that we will continue to move forth and if we can find a way of accommodating that within our current budget going forth for the fiscal year 07, that we look at ways of doing that.
Thank you. Any additional comment? Hearing none. Those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? That's approved. Mr. Deegan.
One final thing, Madam Chairman. We reviewed and had a brief discussion on the Transit Infrastructure Investment Fund resolution, which is considered an administrative item later. That concludes my report.
Thank you. Moving now to the report of the Customer Service Operations and Safety Committee, Mr. Smith.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. The Customer Service Operations and Safety Committee met today, June 15th, and is recommending two action items for board consideration. The first deals with the Metro Access Ad Hoc Advisory Committee report. The report was presented to the committee this morning, and there's a resolution in your documents this morning that effectively implement the recommendations of the committee that are non-economic and move to deal with a consultant for dealing with the economic issues that have economic impact on the authority. And with that, I move the motion that's in the packet.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Discussions?
Madam Chair.
Mr. Kaufman.
Just very briefly, since we did significantly address this in the committee level, I just wanted to note, particularly for the members of the disabled community here with us today, that we very much take your concerns seriously, have heard them, and this is the first of many long-term actions where we're taking a long-term view of giving you quality service. It doesn't mean that tomorrow all service will suddenly be perfect, but it is a very necessary first step. And you've been well served by members of the RAC, members of the Transportation Planning Board staff who stepped forward to help us get this quality product. But again, I just wanted to say that this is a long-term action that step by step you'll get quality service.
Thank you, Mr. Kaufman. And I would just say that your words certainly echo the interest of all the board members, and we thank you again for your efforts here. And also, Mr. Smith. Mr. Linton.
Madam Chair, I'd just like to echo that, but I also want to say that I appreciate the quality and the thought of the commenters this morning. I thought that both their suggestions, the way that they were presented, and indicates both a lot of thought, but also done in a way that gives us some data that we can use to better the service. And if those who come forth in our public comment periods could be as insightful and as directive in terms of how they present their information, I think we will be on a long way to continue to prove this authority.
Thank you for those remarks, Mr. Linton. And I think the testimony here today certainly carries out the objectives of our establishment of the public comment period. If there are no further discussion, those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, that's approved. Thank you. Mr. Smith.
Madam Chairman, the second item for action this morning is the request from staff for board approval to install artwork that has been presented by the D.C. Arts Commission to the board and is being funded by them as well. With that, I move approval of the resolution.
Sorry. Motion and a second. Any discussion? Hearing none, I just want to, on the record, thank the D.C. Arts Commission for this work that they have donated to us and their continuing interest and support for art in our metro stations. We'll call for the vote. Those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, that's approved. Thank you. Mr. Smith.
Lastly, Madam Chairman, we discussed at length the notion of providing entertainment in our rail stations or a vehicle for entertainers to perform in our rail stations and kind of laid out a framework and guidance and guidelines for staff to consider as they try to adopt a policy in that regard. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Smith. That brings us to our administrative actions. The first is...
Madam Chair, I move them in block, if we can.
Second. We have a motion and a second to move the administrative items in block. Is there any comment? You have them before you on the agenda?
Yes, ma'am.
In a discussion, Mr. Solomon.
On item number two?
Yes.
Just an observation so that no one would think that this board took a year and a half to act on the safety concern. I think there is a typographical error. On the first paragraph's second sentence on January 11, 2005, I think that should be 2006. And the same is true in the second paragraph where you have January 1905 and January 2005. It would seem that it should be 06.
Okay, with that correction, any further discussion? Those in favor of approving administrative items 1 through 7, indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Those opposed, that's approved. Thank you. That brings us now to our jurisdictional comments. Mr. Grant.
Madam Chair, I wish to take advantage of the jurisdictional time to read a statement to this board concerning one of our board members, Mr. Robert Smith. Yesterday, I received an email from Maryland House of Delegates member Richard Maddalino to the effect that Maryland Metro board member Robert Smith had made certain highly charged and negative statements. I immediately sent the following email to Mr. Smith, and it reads as follows. A Republican-sponsored ad paraphrased below is said to quote you. It is hard for me to believe that it is true. I want to have your comment and reaction, and it was signed Jim Graham.
Point of order.
The two quotations that were in the email.
Point of order has been raised.
The two quotations.
Point of order.
Is it appropriate we're referring to Republican situations? Is this a political attack of some kind?
Excuse me, Mr. Smith. Mr. Graham has the floor. This is jurisdictional comments. So he may.
Anything goes in jurisdictional comments? Because Maryland hasn't gone.
Well, continue, Mr. Graham.
The two quotations. First, America will be nothing but one big fiesta for illegal aliens and homosexuals. The email went on to say, this is the closing line from the radio attack airing against Democrats in North Carolina and reported by the Washington Post last week. The second quotation, which I quote, is homosexuals are sexual deviants. I was stunned by these statements, which were attributed to Mr. Smith, but I was every bit as stunned by the response that I received from him to my email, which was dated yesterday, June 14th at 11:43 a.m. And I quote directly his email. The quotation, while not explicitly and directly correct, properly characterizes comments that I made on a political roundtable show on Montgomery Cable last weekend, Bob Smith. In the several years that Mr. Smith has served on the board, he and I have had our differences, but in the main, we have worked together on the important issues of this authority. I value the collegial relationships all of us must nurture and maintain as board members. But as someone who cares deeply about human rights, and as an openly gay elected official of the District of Columbia, I cannot remain silent in the face of these comments and Mr. Smith's confirmation of their substantive accuracy. The notion that homosexuality is, quote, deviant behavior was the long-held but now totally discredited view of the American Psychiatric Association. The American Psychiatric Association itself rejected the view in the 1980s, but for many years, that APA dogma that homosexuality is deviant behavior was the basis for all manner of oppressions of gay people here and elsewhere. Mr. Smith must disavow these views and apologize to those he has so seriously offended. If he is unwilling to do so, then I now ask for his resignation, or in the alternative, his removal by the governor of Maryland as a member of this board. I wonder whether Mr. Robert Flanagan, the Maryland Secretary of Transportation, countenances these views. I know Secretary Flanagan's brother, Edward Flanagan, who served with distinction as the openly gay elected auditor of the state of Vermont, and who ran as a candidate for the United States Senate from that state. I wonder if the Secretary of Transportation considers his brother to be a sexual deviant. I can say that I do not consider myself to be a sexual deviant. Madam Chair, I appreciate this opportunity to provide this statement. I have copies for the members of the board and for others who are interested in this matter.
Thank you, Mr. Graham. We next go to Marilyn for jurisdictional comment. Hearing none. Virginia, I'm sorry.
I'm sorry,
you didn't say anything.
The gentleman from Prince George's County would yield for a moment. I'd like to make a comment.
Be quiet, Mr. Smith.
Well, it's not unusual for the gentleman from the District of Columbia to try to make high theater of the Metro Board to chase cameras and other members of the press around the room to make a point and to get into the media for that day's session. I'm not sure if he's characterized. He mentioned two quotations. The first clearly had nothing to do with me. When the gentleman concurred, it was a little confused in the presentation. The first had nothing to do with me. You agree, right? I don't want that to be confused in any way. The second thing I would say is that my personal views relative to sexual deviancy or any other issue that is before the body politic of the state of Maryland for discussion, and my discussion of those in other forums other than here, have absolutely nothing to do with the management and operation of running trains and buses in this transit system, and have not affected in any way my actions or decisions with members of this board or with matters of policy in any of the time that I've been here. And it has no more to do or has no more place at this table today than my decision to be a member of the Roman Catholic Church, for that matter. So in that regard, I find the call and the high theater portrayed by the gentleman from District of Columbia to be highly out of order and inappropriate for this forum and presentation. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Smith. Well, now he's running for Maryland, right?
No, I just asked him to yield for that point. And
okay. Go ahead. Okay.
Given the Maryland report, I just wanted to commend the general manager for bringing the entertainment and rail stations before us today. I hope it's half as successful as the entertainment we've experienced here this morning. But Maryland concludes this report.
Thank you, Mr. Deegan. Virginia, any report?
No report.
Thank you. The meeting. Oh, I'm sorry.
I just wanted to share one piece that we did not note at the Metro Access piece, and that is Fairfax County has begun on its connector service to provide a free service to Metro Access holders about the ID cards. And I think it is a piece of us moving forward to make sure that we provide the breadth of service and a seamless service in terms of how we go across the jurisdiction. So I think it's very important.
Thank you, Ms. Hudgens. Before I adjourn the meeting, I made a mistake in asking the board to approve the goal, the DBE goal for 2007. My notes indicated that I was supposed to ask approval, but I later learned that the work of the committee needs to go to a public hearing, and then the board can only approve after that public hearing. So I guess that means I would make a motion to reconsider the approval of the goal.
Second.
A motion and a second. Any discussion? Hearing none, then those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, that's fine. Now, I also, well.
Now you have to decide what you want to do. You've reconsidered. Now it's back before.
State what you want to do.
I move to send this committee approved goal to public hearing.
Second.
Motion and a second. Any discussion? Those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed. That's approved. And finally, I make a motion to go into executive session to discuss the personnel issue.
Madam Chairman,
second. Motion and a second. Those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed. That's approved. The meeting is adjourned.